Our guest is John Perkins. From 1971 to 81, he worked for the international consulting firm of Charles G. Maine, where he was a self-described economic hitman. His new book is called The Secret History of the American Empire, Economic Hitmen, Jackals, and the Truth About Global Corruption. Let's talk back, going to Latin America, about this Texaco Chevron, Chevron Texaco lawsuit.
Well, it's extremely significant. When I was sent to Ecuador as a Peace Corps volunteer in 1968, Texaco had just gone into Ecuador. And the promise to the Ecuadorian people at that time from Texaco and their own politicians and the World Bank was oil is going to pull this country out of poverty. And people believed it. I believed it at the time. The exact opposite has happened. Oil has made the country much more impoverished. While Texaco has made fortunes off this, it's also destroyed vast areas of the Amazon rainforest. So the lawsuit today that's being brought by a New York lawyer and some Ecuadorian lawyers, Steve Donzinger here in New York, is for $6 billion, the largest environmental lawsuit in the history of the world, in the name of 30,000 Ecuadorian people against Texaco, which is now owned by Chevron, for dumping over 18 billion gallons of toxic waste into the Ecuadorian rainforest. That's 30 times more than the Exxon Valdez. And dozens and dozens of people have died and are continuing to die of cancer and other pollution-related diseases in this area of the Amazon. So all this oil has come out of this area, and it's the poorest area of one of the poorest countries in the hemisphere. And the irony of that is just so amazing. But what I think, one of the really significant things about this, Amy, is that this law firm has taken this on, not pro bono, but they expect, if they win the case, which they expect to do, to make a lot of money off of it, which is a philosophical decision. It isn't because they wanted to get rich off this. It's because they want to encourage other law firms to do similar things in Nigeria and in Indonesia and in Bolivia and Venezuela and many other places. So they want to see a business grow out of this, of law firms going in and defending poor people, knowing that they can get a payoff from the big companies who have acted so terribly, terribly, terribly irresponsibly in the past. And Steve Donzinger, the attorney, I was in Ecuador with him just 2 weeks ago, and one of the very touching things he said is he's an American attorney with, you know, very good credentials, and he says, you know, I've seen a lot of companies make mistakes and then try to defend themselves in law courts, and he said, that's one thing, but in this case, Texaco didn't make mistakes. This was done with intent. They knew what they were doing. To save a few bucks, they killed a lot of people, and now they're going to be forced to pay for that, to take responsibility for that, and hopefully open the door to make many companies take responsibility for the wanton destruction that's occurred.
Let's talk about Latin America and its leaders like Jaime Roldos. Talk about him and his significance. You wrote about him in your first book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman.
Yeah, Jaime Roldos was an amazing man. After many years of military dictators in Ecuador, U.S. puppet dictators, there was a democratic election, and one man, Jaime Roldos, ran on a platform that said Ecuadorian resources ought to be used to help the Ecuadorian people, and specifically oil, which at that time was just coming in. This was in the late 70s. And I was sent to Ecuador, and I was also sent at the same time to Panama to work with Omar Torrijos to bring these men around, to corrupt them, basically, to change their minds. They'd, you know, in the case of Jaime Roldos, he won the election by a landslide, and now he started to put into action his policy, his promises, and was going to tax the oil companies if they weren't willing to give much more of their profits back to the Ecuadorian people. Then he threatened to nationalize them. So I was sent down along with other economic hitmen. I played a fairly minor role in that case and a major one in Panama with Torrijos. But we were sent into these countries to get these men to change their policies, to go against their own campaign promises. And basically what you do is you tell them, look, you know, if you play our game, I can make you and your family very wealthy. I can make sure that you get very rich. If you don't play our game, if you follow your campaign promises, you may go the way of Allende in Chile or Arbenz in Guatemala or Lumumba in the Congo. On and on. We can list all these presidents that we've either overthrown or assassinated because they didn't play our game. But Jaime would not come around, Jaime Roldos. He stayed uncorruptible, as did Omar Torrijos. And both of these, and from an economic hitman perspective, this is very disturbing, because not only did I know I was likely to fail at my job, but I knew that if I failed, something dire was going to happen. The jackals would come in, and they would either overthrow these men or assassinate them. And in both cases, these men were assassinated. I have no doubt they died in airplane crashes 2 months apart from each other in 1981, a single plane, their own private planes.
Explain crashed. More what happened with Omar Torrijos.
Well, Omar, again, was very, very stalwartly standing up to the United States, demanding that the Panama Canal should be owned by Panamanians. And I spent a lot of time with Torrijos, and I liked him very, very much as an individual. He was extremely charismatic, extremely courageous, and very nationalistic about wanting to get the best for his people. And I couldn't corrupt him. I tried everything I could possibly do to bring him around. As I was failing, I was also very concerned that something would happen to him. And sure enough, it was interesting that Jaime Roldos's plane crashed in May, and Torrijos said, got his family together and said, "I'm probably next, but I'm ready to go. We've now got the canal turned over." He'd signed a treaty with Jimmy Carter to get the canal in Panamanian hands. He said, I've accomplished my job, and I'm ready to go now. And he had a dream about being in a plane that hit a mountain. And within 2 months after it happened to Roldos, it happened to Torrijos also.
And you met with both these men?
Yes, I met with both
what
of them.
What were your conversations like?
Well, especially with Torrijos, I spent a lot of time with him in some formal meetings and also at cocktail parties and barbecues. He was big on things like that. And it was constantly trying to get him to come around to our side and letting him know that if he did, he and his family would get some very lucrative contracts, would become very wealthy. And, you know, warning him, and he didn't really need much warning because he knew what would be likely to happen if he didn't. And his attitude was, I want to get done what I can in my lifetime, and then so be it. And it's been interesting, Amy, that since I wrote the book Confessions, Marta Roldos, who's Jaime's daughter, has come to the United States to meet with me, and I just spent time with her in Ecuador. She's now a member of Parliament in Ecuador, just elected. And she married Omar Torrijos's nephew. And it's really interesting to hear their stories about what was going on. She was 17 at the time. Her mother was also in the plane that her father died, and the two of them died in that plane. And then to hear her talk about how her husband, Omar's nephew, was in that meeting when the family was called together, and Omar said, I'm probably next, but I'm ready to go. I've done my job. I've done what I could do for my people, so I'm ready to go if that's what has to happen.
So what were your conversations at the time with other so-called economic hitmen? You became the chief consultant at Charles Main.
Chief economist,
chief,
right?
Well,
you know, when I was with other people, that we could be sitting at a table, say in the Hotel Panama, knowing that we're both here to win these guys over, but we also had our official jobs, which were to do studies on the economy to show how if the country accepted the loan, it was going to improve its gross national product. We would talk about those kinds of things. I suspect a little bit like if two CIA agents, spies, get together, have a beer together, they don't really talk about what they're really doing beneath the surface, but they've got an official job too, and that's what you focus on. And in fact, the two, in my case, are very closely linked. So we were producing these economic reports that would prove to the World Bank and would prove to Omar Torrijos that if he accepted these huge loans, then his country's gross national product would just mushroom and pull his people out of poverty. And it was we produced these reports, which made sense from a mathematical econometric standpoint. And in fact, it often happened that with these loans, the GNP, the gross national product, did increase. But what also was true, and what Omar knew, and Jaime Roldos knew, and I was coming to know very strongly, was that even if the general economy increased, the poor people with these loans would get poorer. The rich would make all the money because most of the poor people weren't even tied into the gross national product. A lot of them didn't even make income. They were living off subsistence farming. They benefited nothing, but they were left holding the debt.